Hi, this is Rod Faulkner, and you are listening to the 7thMatrix.com Eye on Sci-Fi podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of the 7thMatrix.com Eye on Sci-Fi podcast, the podcast where we share with you terrific indie science fiction and fantasy online short films and web series. Thanks for listening. This episode is our very first special expanded edition episode of the new year, and it features our conversation with independent filmmaker Anthony Ferraro. Anthony is the creator of the award-winning sci-fi comedy web series Galactic Galaxy that features Jeff Lewis, who was part of the cast of Felicia Day's hit comedy web series The Guild. Anthony was kind enough to discuss with us his filmmaking career, including what led to the creation of Galactic Galaxy, and also what motivated him to begin creating filmmaking tutorials for do-it-yourself filmmakers on a no or macro budget. So, without further ado, please enjoy the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast interview with filmmaker Anthony Ferraro. Anthony, hi. Welcome to the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast, man.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, listen, it is a pleasure to have you. And I want to take this opportunity because we are going to discuss your sci-fi comedy web series, Galactic Galaxy. But I wanted to congratulate you because Galactic Galaxy won Outstanding Film at the Berlin Sci-Fi Film Fest. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was quite an honor and very exciting. It's very exciting. I'm not a competitive person, never have been, and but it's nice to win.
I bet. And you actually traveled to Berlin to accept the award, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that's a great story if you have a second for that story.
Certainly.
I have my group of friends, and I was at a friend's, was having a group birthday party, and everybody was asking me about Galactic Galaxy, and I was like, yeah, we got into Berlin, that's great, and then they were like, oh, how exciting, you're going to Berlin, and I was like, well, I can't really afford that, but, you know, I'm excited, and because everybody knows what I do, everybody at the party asked me about the show. And I said, Berlin, can't afford to go. To make a long story short, about a week later, I get a call from a friend, and they asked me, what's your Venmo password? I was like, what? And my friends had just gone ahead and raised the money to send me to Berlin. So I really, I really feel like going with that energy really helped us to win, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's terrific.
Doing that sort of thing, but... Yeah, so it was nice. It was nice, and I guess this is a chance for me to publicly say thank you to all those people who had the belief and support of me.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling to know that you have that support network of people who really care about you and the work that you do.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I would say is people, you know, even though it's tough when you're doing it yourself, people do recognize that.
That's terrific. Well, you know that here at the 7th Matrix, we're big fans of Galactic Galaxy. But for our listeners, go ahead and describe what Galactic Galaxy is.
Yeah, it's a space saga. It's a space opera, but space saga seems to make more sense to people. And it's about a space werewolf named Fen who teams up with a space trucker named Pam. And they go on a journey to rob an illegal space disco in order to save the galaxy and fulfill the Fen's destiny. But well, the thing that's probably unique about it is the look of it. people confuse it for rotoscope. It looks like rotoscope. It's not technically rotoscope, but it has a really graphic look about it.
It's very reminiscent of the cult classic sci-fi film Heavy Metal. When I watched it, that's immediately what comes to mind. But yeah, Galactic Galaxy really does have its own visual language and look. But what inspired you to use a version of rotoscoping?
You know, it's one of those things. It was, in the beginning, it was purely a financial consideration. So I knew I had this big, you know, saga vision. I had this huge vision, lots of galaxies, lots of characters, you know, lots of spaceships flying by. And, you know, in my research, sci-fi on a budget, even with best intentions, if it's, it just never looks good. And I feel it undermines the story, right? Even, I mean, these films that cost $100 million, like, it's money well spent because, you know, the visuals, you don't even think about them, you know, and I think even TV is up to ante a little bit, but in small productions, when you watch short films, when they're trying to do a lot, like aliens and spaceships, and you know, the thing takes place on a bridge of a ship that they built, and they don't have a lot of money, it always, to me, undermined sort of the content, you know, no matter how hard you try. That's why, so then the first thought was, well, it's comedy, you can get away with more, you know? And then I still was realizing that I wasn't going to have the money. And I was talking early on to a friend of mine who's a producer, and my intention was never the style that it is now. And they said to me, you know, you're never going to raise enough money for this. You should just make a graphic novel. And I said, well, you know, thanks, but I can't, you know, it's not what I want to do. So I walked away from that, but it was somebody that I respected. I was just thinking and thinking. And then all of a sudden it just popped into my head. I don't know if you remember, Marvel used to have those cartoons, I think they were like, they're probably in the 60s or 70s, but obviously, you know, I saw the syndication of that where, you know, it was like Captain America, or it was very simple animation, right? It was like,
yes.
You know, it was like almost one frame of movement, and then they would slide the character. But those were really compelling. And, you know, you remembered them. If you talk to people about them, they're like, yeah, of course I remember those. So then I started thinking, huh, what kind of animation thing? And I started doing research, and I found ways to turn live action into sort of an illustrated look with software. And then the further down the rabbit hole I went, I realized that I could do it live action, but turn it into an animation. And then that way I could make my environments, all of my sets, do it 3D in the computer, but at a very inexpensive, sort of accessible way, because I was going to put this treatment on it.
Right.
Cut to happy accident, cut to like, this is the best thing that ever happened for me because it looks better than what I initially imagined. Right. So I attribute that to sort of being open to what's realistic, what's possible, and then making the best of that.
Oh, that is so fascinating. And it's interesting that a colleague of yours recommended a graphic novel in the beginning for the project, because in my review of it, I described it as a graphic novel on acid come to life. It's really nothing like it. And I commend you on that, because the visuals are terrific. But also, too, your cast was phenomenal. They had such chemistry. Julia and Jonathan, Tom.
Yeah.
What was the casting process like?
Right. So I live in Los Angeles, right? And so one of the benefits of living here is that because there's so many people trying to do all aspects of filmmaking and series making, that there's plenty of people around that have talent, you know. So I just casted, you know, locally, and Jonathan, I couldn't find the person I was looking for, and then I just started looking at reels, actors' reels online, I came across his, and I thought, oh, this guy would be great. So I went and saw him, and he was down for it. And so that was Jonathan. Julia is interesting. So I originally had another woman cast as the part of Pam.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and I did a short film as a proof of concept. And that was like a while ago. And the girl who was in that role also had a career, and she got a promotion. She had to make a decision. So in the 11th hour, I had to replace that character. And because I live in Los Angeles, like I said, so Julia, you know, I probably saw about 40 people for the role. And
wow.
She couldn't make the audition. She sent me, you know, she filmed herself on the phone. She sent it to me. I was like, wow, she's great. And I saw some other things she did. And so I was just really lucky to find her. And then the Dark Hussar, the main heavy, is played by Jeff Lewis. And people who know web series, he was in The Guild, which was Felicia Day's web series.
Right.
So it was very exciting to get him. And it's kind of like one of those stories you hear, and it's kind of a cliche. But when we were in the writing room, I kept saying, I want him to be like, you know that character Vork from The Guild? And everybody would say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, I want the character to be like that. And so we had that as a point of reference. And then when it was time to cast, I thought, well, you know, I guess I should try to, should ask him, you know. And then so I, you know, I found out who his manager was. And I was... It was truthful for me to say to him, we actually wrote this role with you in mind, you know, and then so he responded well to it, and he agreed to do it. And then Romain, the guy who plays the Skull General, that's a small part, but he's actually like, he shows up in Parks and Recs as the police chief. He's, you know, you'll see him like a Dumb and Dumber as the bus driver. Like he was, you know, that was a small role, but he's really solid. Solid.
Oh, wow.
Guy. So again, Los Angeles, you know?
Yeah. And a little bit of serendipity too, it sounds like.
Yeah. 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 So, and then, you know, the rest of the cast was just great. So, and I think, you know, when you're asking people to put on spacesuits and shoot guns and that sort of thing, it really elevates things because they're legitimately having fun. You
yeah,
know?
And it shows.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. And then Osanko, so Jonathan, he has these huge prosthetic teeth and he has these ears, these giant, like, pointed ears, so it's exaggerated, you know? And he just really like flew with that, you know, and then come to find out, I didn't know this. Like if you go to Universal on Christmas for the Grinch, he's the Grinch. Like he does all that kind of stuff. Like if you go to Universal and it's Beetlejuice, like that's him, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Like he lives for that, you know? So I just, yeah, I got really, really lucky.
Yeah, it sounds like you hit the casting jackpot for Galactic Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah, I think so.
Well, one thing I did want to ask you, Anthony, and I didn't know if maybe it was something that I read into the project when I watched it, but it is a hilarious comedy, but it seems to also kind of gently subverts and sends up some very popular tropes in science fiction. Am I on the right track here?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Because it was comedy, I had no problem. Like, pretty much everything is a touchstone of something else in science fiction lore. You know, it's definitely homage. Just about every beat pays homage to some, like Pam Redcup, right? Her. You know, it's because those red cups that you get at a party are made by the company Solo, right? Like Han Solo. So
right.
It's like, you know, like little things like that. And then the thing, I guess, for me is that, you know, I was thinking, I love science fiction, right? You know, as do you. And what's interesting is when we love this genre, it seems finite at some point, right? Where it's like, oh, let me watch that. It's like, oh, I already saw that. I kind of like envy what you do because you see a lot of things that a lot of people don't get access to. And then you sort of highlight it for us and then we go find it. And what I had this thought, you know, I was never a sports person, you know, and my father is, my brother is, one of my friends. And, you know, when people talk about sports, they talk about the game and the players and different things. And then there's the sports channels where they, and the radio shows where they just talk about the games and the players. But then I had this realization that people, you know, in that air quotes I'm doing now, like geek culture, they're it's like people talking about sports, you know, when they talk about Star Wars or Star Trek. It could be, you know, a couple of people talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox. You know, it's kind of that same thing. And then now with like what we're doing now and the podcasts and the Talking Dead and, you know, the new Star Trek has a talk show afterwards. It's kind of like the sports shows, you know? And so when I started thinking about that, it was like, you know, you hear this thing where you have somebody who's a creator and they have this, they'll say this thing that you hear often. Well, you know, I've never seen it done like that before, or we were going to do that, but that's, you know, that's cliche. And I kind of decided to throw that away. And I started thinking, well, you know, for a lot of us, there's not enough of this content. So you know, back to your question about the sort of the tropes and the themes, my feeling is those themes of those tropes are golden. Those are what we want to see, right? Like baseball is always the same game, but the outcome is different because of the different teams and the different players, right?
Exactly.
So my feeling is creating sci-fi, it's within all these sort of established structures that we are familiar with, but what cast, what adventure I put in there makes it different. So, yes, I gravitate towards everything that we've seen before, but with a new cast in a new environment.
It's obvious, Anthony, that you are really passionate about science fiction and fantasy. So, and I am too. But can you recall who or what first inspired your love of the genre?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I'm going to date myself a little, but I was a little kid in the neighborhood. And my parents, for some reason, we didn't listen to music in the house, and we didn't go to the movies. I have memory of going to the drive-ins maybe once as a kid. Great people, but that was just not their thing, you know. So
right.
I have this memory of playing with the neighborhood kids, and the kid up the road, his father, it was a weekend, he scooped up all the kids in the neighborhood, put us in his station wagon, took us to the movies, and it was Star Wars. And I saw Star Wars in the movie theater when I was really, really little.
Wow.
And that you know, just the spaceship coming over your head, it sucked you in. Yeah, it really was. Like, to be a kid and see that at that time is really... there's no turning back, you know? And then, I don't know, I loved the TV show Buck Rogers. My first little boy crush on like a woman was Princess Ardala.
You're bringing back memories, man.
So, and then to see the evolution of the genre, you know, really just sort of empowered me, I guess, to go further and further. And I just always, you know, anything that was, I didn't know it in my youth, but I know it now. Anything that's like allegorical or sort of, you know, overcoming adversity, that is framed in a, you know, in sci-fi fantasy for me, you know, I don't really have, it's not really a big difference to me, sci-fi fantasy, even Westerns, you know. It's all like, you know, if I'm going to watch a film or entertainment that's giving me sort of a life lesson or make me feel or think about life, I prefer it framed, you know, in a spaceship rather than in an office building.
I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah.
You mentioned, too, about, I love that you brought up Buck Rogers. I think we're contemporary age-wise, and, ahead. I'll be turning 50 this year, so. I love Buck Rogers in the 25th century, and, oh, God, Bionic Woman. I liked Lindsay Wagner in that role more so than the $6 Million Man. She was my favorite, and, of course, Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. And it really brings up another point about the current state of science fiction and fantasy. And something else that I really loved about Galactic Galaxy is that it is a comedy. Because I think that, especially in television and on film, the power of sci-fi to entertain as well as provide a message, or I should say being more lighthearted, is kind of lost, because right now we have so many dystopias and post-apocalyptic stories. Why do you feel that is? Why do you feel that there are not that many sci-fi comedies or more lighthearted or aspirational science fiction stories being made?
I mean, that's a good question. If I had to think about that, I don't know, because I think maybe those have a broader appeal, you know, like maybe that for like a person that's usually not attracted or watches, you know, like Walking Dead or something like that, where I guess it's a bigger audience, and, you know, maybe it's the way people are a little more jaded these days. I don't know. I mean, content wise, storytelling wise, I think, you know, I honestly don't know, but I think, you know, from what I was saying earlier, like production wise, like if I was going to do a live action, drama, I would probably lean towards making it dystopian, because that's more achievable on a budget.
Okay. Right. I see that. And, you know, really comedy too, just pure comedy period as a subgenre in and of itself, is really challenging. Comedy, I think in many ways, like, it's a lot harder.
I put together a writer's room, just for that reason, because, I think I can make something funny, and I have funny ideas. My tendency is to joke. And I did a first draft of the script, and it was funny, but it was the story structure was not as tight as I would like it. And I just thought, you know, you always hear about the writer's room, right? The writer's room always sounds interesting. And I always thought, wow, you know, that would be great. And then I had this thought, I was like, well, I could create one. So, again, because I'm in Los Angeles, I said, all right, I'm going to take 5 days. I rented, because there's tons of space out here, so you can get things inexpensively. I got they call it a bullpen space. So that's basically like a big office with like 5 or 6 desks, right? So okay. I put an ad in the Craigslist. And I said, look, you know, I'm looking for writers. It'll be 5 days, little money. You know, this is not a question, but my advice to people making sci-fi or films out of budget is you just have to be really upfront about the money. You're not going to get the best people off the bat, but you will get 50 or 100 people interested, and of those 50 or 100, you can find a diamond in the rough or somebody who's just willing to play along. So I put this ad. I got three other writers and myself. And then here's the kicker. So one of the – everybody responds. They give me writing samples. I say, okay, this person seems like we're on the same page. And this one guy – just sends me a link and nothing else. And I was like, what is this? So I click on the link, and it's the, I don't know if you've ever seen the Robot Chicken sketch with Palpatine.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's hysterical. Anyway, he was one of the writers on that. So
Wow.
Okay. So one of our writers was Charles Horn, who was a writer on the first Star Wars Robot Chicken special. So that was really helpful.
That's
and
amazing.
So it was nice because the dynamic was he was like the Simon Cowell in the room. You know, it was good to have him. You know, he'd be like, So by having a team of people, so in my experience, I can say writing stories, kind of storylines and through lines and building worlds. I have no problem doing that in the coffee shop or at my office. But with comedy, it was super, super helpful. I feel almost necessary to do that with a group of people. So we were able to really, you know, you have this idea and you're like, oh, and he does this. And then everybody crickets and everybody's looking at you. You're like, okay, maybe not. And then all of a sudden somebody says something and you get excited and you start laughing and then it kind of infects everybody else and you kind of roll. And so comedy is hard, but I think it as a group effort, it's a little more doable. If that makes sense. I'm not sure if I answered the question.
No, definitely you did answer the question. It's a case of you probably need more than one chef in the kitchen in order to make that alchemy work.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Well, it definitely...
And I think it's more, you know, for me, I'm still fairly unknown. So, you know, I want to make my work accessible, you know, and comedy is definitely, you know, if you're coming out of nowhere... people don't know who you are. They're not familiar with your work, and you're just like laying something on them. It's a little softer landing, I feel, with something that's humorous.
Do you intend on revisiting the world of Galactic Galaxy?
Yeah, I certainly do. I mean, I left the final episode sort of in a cliffhanger, like, oh, what happens? Because I certainly love to do a season two. I already have, you know, obviously I've thought about what happens, and I'd love to continue. It's the way that I made that show, it's a lot of work. So for season two, I have some ideas and plans in mind to streamline that process.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a matter of, like, that's definitely a show. I'm a DIY filmmaker. That's the core of what I do and what I preach. But that show it needs a little bit of money. So the hope is that there'll be some sort of interest in it, and I can carry on with a season two. So we'll see. And another possibility is, you know, trying to start up a Patreon or something like that. But I'd rather not do that. I'm happy for somebody to sponsor it. So I'm always talking to people about that. So, you know, I'm hopeful. But as of right now, there's no definite plans for that.
Well, if there are any potential sponsors out there at the sound of my voice, definitely look up Mr. Ferraro so that we can get a Galactic Galaxy Season 2. And you know, I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. You and me both fingers.
Well, I kind of want to pivot too into your other endeavors that you have going on, but I want to get a little personal for just a minute, if I may. And during my research, in your bio, it stated that in your career, you first started out making contemporary dramas. And I just was interested to know, what was the event that made you pivot and start producing sci-fi films, which is your true passion?
Yeah, of course. So my background is theater. I went to school for theater. I have a BFA in theater, and I have an MA in theater. I went to Marymount Manhattan, for acting and directing, and then I went to the Royal Academy in London for text and performance and a directing degree. So it's very... a very serious storyteller, right? Like I took myself very serious, and that was from like my theater background.
Right.
But then at a certain point towards the end of my theater, I started getting into clowning of all things, and I made this series of clown films. And
wow.
So my theater work had always been like very serious, like, you know, for people who know theater, like Sam Shepard, and, you know, very intense kind of things and very lofty, you know. And then at the end of that, I found this guy, Philippe Guillet, who was in London, and he's probably most famous because that's who Sacha Baron Cohen kind of credits as his teacher. So I studied with that guy, and I got into clowning. And I made this series of black and white clown films, which they're actually on Amazon Prime now. And so that was probably the best thing and the most successful thing that I ever did. But I couldn't maintain it because there was no money in it. And then I started getting into film. So there's a little foreshadowing there. So it's like I'm doing the series theater, but then as soon as I start doing this clown work, which is more visceral, more sort of, it wasn't comedy, but it was definitely more accessible and true to me. And it was very successful within that world. But then, so I go into the film world. I start, a friend of mine has a production company. I start learning producing and editing. And right at that time was the desktop revolution, right? So I was editing on Final Cut 1. I was there when the first, you know, video, like the XL1 and the Sony VS2000?
Yes.
It was all these video cameras. And so all of a sudden I had this group of people that we had put together theater companies and put together theater productions only because we couldn't make movies, you know. And now all of a sudden we can make movies, right? So then... make a long story longer. So then I'm right at the cusp of this digital revolution. I have this background in producing theater. So it was a lateral move to start producing movies. And then I see Dogma 95. And I become aware of, is it 93 or 95? Dogma 95. And I become aware of Lars von Trier and this whole movement of making movies on commercial, non-commercial equipment, amateur equipment, no lighting, no, just telling a story, right? And I went and saw a film, one of the films of the Dogma series, Celebration. And I walked out of that film and I was like, oh, wow, right, I can do this. So I made... at the time, it didn't have. Now it's called Mumblecore. If any of your readers or listeners are familiar with Mumblecore, those are the early films that are. They tend to be improvisational. It's shot with like no lighting, you know, just very low budget films, and it was kind of birthed out of the excitement of hey, I can make a film, you know. So I would make these films, and in the early days, I was trying to be literally trying to be like a Jim Jarmusch. I took myself very seriously, and I would make these movies, and it was a great experience. But it's, you know, when I'm proud of those, and I'd be happy to share those, but it wasn't anything groundbreaking. It wasn't anything that was propelling me forward creatively and as far as people being interested in my work. So then at a certain point, I was working for Al Gore, had a TV station for a minute called Current TV. And I was a producer.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was a producer and an editor on that show. And that was very exciting. And I met a lot of great people, and it was very exciting. So then I just kind of got lost in my work because my work was creative, you know. And then I got out of my work and I was getting ready to do another project. And I was like, what? You know, everything I go to see, everything I watch, I only watch science fiction and fantasy. If it's got a sword or a laser gun, I'm there. I'm not going to the, you know, I'm not watching Criterion Collection cinema. I'm not watching classic cinema. Excuse me. So I was like, what am I doing? So I just sat down and I got really interested in Joseph Campbell's monomyth, right? So the monomyth, a lot of people know what that is now, the hero's journey. But it's basically, I mean, Lucas followed that with Star Wars. It's just basically, he kind of put together or looked at all the myths in the world and said, like, what's the general through line, right? So the hero's journey is the call, you know, it's a young person, they get called to action, they're like, oh, I don't want to do that, oh, I should do that. They go on the road to do it, they meet a person that helps them, they come across an elder, there's some conflict, I can't do that, they overcome adversity, they do their thing, they save the town, they go home, and they're, you know, it's like, okay, it's like every story. And I really started, that appealed to me. And so I just sort of, as an exercise for myself, you know, I was like, I'm going to follow this formula, and see what happens. And then it was just liberating, because as soon as I started, making science fiction and fantasy, it just felt, you know, this is a cliche, I'm doing air quotes, we're talking here. the air is, you know, it was my authentic voice. Like, it was, okay. It was like, oh, this is really, honestly, what I have to offer, you know? And then I found myself, you know, sometimes you got to make it up as you go along.
Yes.
Really found myself in this genre that I actually knew what I was talking about, right? So it felt less like when I was doing my sort of very heady things, we would have discussions and ideas, and I was by the seat of my pants, where it was sci-fi and fantasy. People asked me questions. I had very clear answers, you know? I was
right.
Like, yes, no, this is, you know, and I had very clear ideas of what I wanted to do. And, you know, because with no budget, I have no problem doing this kind of work, because it is my passion.
Well, it definitely shows, Anthony, and I do want to talk about your filmmaking tutorials, and I commend you for that, because when I discovered them, and folks, listen, you need to follow Anthony on Instagram. His Create Sci-Fi Instagram feed is one of my favorites. But we're also going to talk about his YouTube channel. But I commend you, because it's a lot of work just to be a independent filmmaker. But then you have, and it's not a filmmaking masterclass, it's literally a filmmaking school, a university, with all of these YouTube videos. So what was the impetus behind you starting that?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So, okay, so a little bit of my background. So I said I worked for Al Gore's Current TV, right? So for 3 years, I would make, like, we were like right before YouTube as well. So my whole career, you know, to pay the rent is I make these streaming videos, these 5 to 10 minute videos of whatever. From you know, I did them for Pandora, for musicians. I've done them for news. I've done them for Starbucks and Panera Bread. You know, where these, like, there's no more brochures anymore. It's like a 5 minute video, right? So I've been working, editing, producing those for years now, years, probably more years than I realize. So that is something I have in my pocket, right? So I did put together a channel, but in thinking about putting together a channel, that's a main component that I just can do myself, right? So I'm a big fan of creator TV, right? So, you know, we were talking about Buck Rogers. You know, I was always, as a kid, was riveted by, like, This Old House, right? Like, I love these making shows. And then later on, you know, with the advent of, you know, the cooking channel, right? And also that's a phenomenon because everybody just watch people cook, right?
Right.
So I find myself with YouTube, there's a lot of sci-fi stuff that's expensive, so I have the ability to make it myself. So I start following all these channels, Punished Props with Bill Duran, where he does foam fabrication. So that's how I learned to make the foam armor. And then there's a guy, Evil Ted, who does props and costumes. And then Adam Savage from the Mythbusters, he has this great channel called Tested, where, you know, it's reviewing films, making films. So I'm just watching this content all the time. And early on, I was talking with a coach, and, you know, he was telling me with the web series, so this ties into Galactic Galaxy, with the web series, it's very difficult to get the audience, right? And then when we're talking about a season two, if somebody's going to support that season two or sponsor it, they want to see that there's an audience, right?
Right.
So this is a big conundrum. How do you build that audience? And then there was this series that was on Vimeo called The Underwater Realm. And it was these guys in England, and they were making these fantasy films, and they wanted them to be underwater. And
that's pretty ambitious.
Yeah. So what they would do is they made all these videos about the process. And those videos would get like hundreds of thousands of views. And then it also enabled them to have a big enough audience that they could raise money through like crowdfunding. Like a substantial amount of money. And then they made these films. And for me, just wasn't my, I was more interested in the how-to videos, you know? And then all of a sudden it was sort of an eye-opener that if I say, hey, Anthony Ferrara got this great new sci-fi Galactic Galaxy post on social media, whatever, and I put it out there and I meta tag it and I do everything I got to do for people to find it. Not a lot of people are looking for Anthony Ferraro's sci-fi, you know, enough, but not a lot, you know?
Right.
But if I make a video, how to make a laser blaster, there's people looking for that. Or if I do a software tutorial, how to make a hologram. This is how I, because I know how to do these things, right? And I have this ability already to make videos pretty easily because I've been doing it for a long time. And then people are looking for that, you know, so I can gain more subscribers and interest in what I do by offering in exchange, I'm going to show you how to edit, which is the video I just did this week, or I'm going to show you how you can film on your phone. If you don't have any money, but you have an idea, you can do that. And I share all these things. So then those people I gather, and they subscribe to me. So now moving forward, Galactic Galaxy Season 2 or this other short film that I just finished, Erringer, which is a sci-fi, I'll release it to that audience that joined me in the filmmaking and the sci-fi fantasy prop making tutorials. And so then they're aware of my work, they're interested in what I would do. If they're following me, obviously I do things that are tied to my work. And then so it's just a way, it's a symbiotic thing where I'm contributing to them, they're watching my stuff, and then that was where that came from. Now, having said all that, that's like kind of the foundation of it, right? But
right.
The reality is, and the only reason I've been doing it for over a year now is, and this is important, is I genuinely, honest to goodness, just love to do it. I'm compelled
right.
to do it. And I think that's, you know, important to anything. It's like so many people daydream or think, oh, I'd like to do this or whatever. But to really do it, it's like you just have to be compelled. You know, it has to be like with my weekly how-to videos. I honestly, I can't help myself. I can't wait to make the next one, you know. So I just really enjoy it. And I go over what I try to do is half the time I do practical, like props. And because I say on my channel, like the barrier to entry, I think a lot of people want to make short films. Okay, so this goes back to where we were talking about the dystopian thing, right? So I think a lot of people want to make a science fiction fantasy piece, but the barrier to entry is the props, the costumes, the special effects, right? The extra work that goes into it. And, you know, if they were to do it like dystopian, then just got to find a warehouse or a desert and put on some ragged clothes and you're good to go, right? So I kind of try to make it more accessible, like how I went about it, where it's like, well, you can, you know, pick and choose the things that you can do yourself and kind of DIY them. And so I try to do tutorials to make that work accessible, because I do, you know, one thing that's very popular on my channel is I'll go to the dollar store and I'll find a few things that are kind of interesting looking, glue them together, give them a professional paint treatment, and we got a laser gun, you know? So
yeah, let me interject too, Anthony, by saying this, and I have to bring up this point, is that, and to all my listeners, I follow Anthony on social media, Instagram and YouTube, and with his prop making films, his props, when he's done, look comparable to anything you might see on a multi-million dollar yeah. film set. It is remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all, you know, it's doable, you know. And I find that that it's the big picture, you know, is what I want to do is more Galactic Galaxy and tell stories. Right. And so
right.
for me, what that's going to take is building my own audience. And by doing these tutorials, by having this channel, it allows me to do that. And, you know, it's you know, I've heard, I do have a friend or two that are teachers, and I've heard them say that it helps them to learn. And I've kind of experienced by committing myself to, teaching and sharing my knowledge about filmmaking with people, it's for sure made me better at it. You know, it's like especially when I do the filmmaking tutorials, you know, it just forces me to rethink what I think I already know.
Right.
and to sort of digest it and present it in a way to people that's truthful and helpful. And then, so the benefit for me is that I think it makes me better at those things that I'm sharing. And basically the idea is I've done I have a series of films on DIY filmmaking. I always stress that because my videos are not for somebody who's like I just did the editing one. It's not for, oh, you want to get into the profession of editing? Watch this video and I'm going to instruct you on editing.
Right.
It's a DIY for, I want to make a film. I'm going to need to edit it myself because I don't have money. I'm showing you this is how you can just do it today. Like, just get in there, do this, do this, do this. You'll be fine. You're not looking to make a career out of it. You're looking to make a film that'll hopefully propel you forward where your next film you'll be able to afford somebody to edit it. And then through all my series of videos, perhaps you're good at editing, but you have this idea and you don't have money, but you've never shot before. Well, I give you a brief overview of, like, look, these are the basic shots you need to do. If you do a wide, a medium, close-up, some insert, you'll be fine, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, so.
Well, again, I commend you, Anthony. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, it's just sharing. And then, you know, what's my motivation? My motivation is to build an audience so that ultimately my YouTube channel is ultimately, for me, just developing a platform so that in between these how-tos, I will release my content to an audience that's already established.
Well, you are definitely offering a great service to the filmmaking community, and I've watched many of your videos. I just get sucked in, and no joke, you have a very down-to-earth, engaging style when you present your videos, and you give a lot of informative information. So anyone that is out there, if you are thinking about making a short film or web series independently and you don't have a budget or it's going to be low budget, Anthony takes you from script writing to production, pre and post, all the way to marketing the finished product. Definitely you need to check out his tutorials that are on YouTube and his Instagram feed. And Anthony, where can our listeners go to find out about your work, Galactic Galaxy, and also your filmmaking tutorials?
Yeah, so, you know, Galactic Galaxy is available on YouTube right now, online. The easiest way to get there to all to the YouTube page and the social media for Galactic Galaxy is there's a hub website, www.watchgalacticgalaxy.com, and if you go to that, that'll route you to the YouTube page, and you can watch the first six episodes. And I'd love for you to do that. Create Sci-Fi. Same thing. We have a YouTube channel and an Instagram. So if you go to createsci-fi.com, that's the blog. But from that page, you know, at the top is the links to the YouTube page, the Facebook page, the Instagram.
Okay, and I will definitely include links to Watch Galactic Galaxy and createsci-fi.com in the official show notes of this podcast episode. So that way it'll be accessible to all of our listeners. And Anthony, thank you so much for joining me again. It has been a terrific conversation, man. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And I love your work as well, Rod. You really just the amount of content that you cover, the insight that you give, it's really a pleasure to follow the Seventh Matrix. So it's an honor to be here talking with you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a mutual love and passion for the genre, which we both have and we both can understand. And of course, you have an open invitation to come back on the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast at any time. And yeah, just, you know, wish you well on all your endeavors and definitely keep us posted on a potential season two for Galactic Galaxy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you, Ralph.
And there you have it, the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast interview with filmmaker Anthony Ferraro. Anthony is an extremely interesting guy. And again, I encourage everyone to check out his filmmaking tutorials on his Create Sci-Fi YouTube channel. We are going to place a link in the show notes to where you can watch not only his sci-fi comedy web series Galactic Galaxy online, but where you can also watch his filmmaking tutorials on YouTube. If you are interested in guerrilla, no and micro budget filmmaking, you will be hard pressed to find a more accessible and comprehensive array of filmmaking tutorials than what Anthony has provided on his YouTube channel. So definitely check that out. Hey everyone. Before I sign off, I needed to ask your help. Ever since the7thmatrix.com came online in 2013, the site has been operating ad-free, and I'm very proud of that fact, for two main reasons. The first reason is because operating ad-free allows us to be able to focus all of the attention on the terrific independent genre content that we feature on the site. And I personally feel that in our daily lives, we are inundated with advertising, and I wanted The Seventh Matrix to be an online oasis away from all of that. And the second reason is that operating ad-free enables us to maintain editorial independence and control. However, in order to keep the lights on, we need your help. If you are enjoying the content that we provide here on the Eye on Sci-Fi podcast and over at the7thmatrix.com, then I ask you to please visit the7thmatrix.com/support in order to learn all of the ways in which you can help us continue to do the work that we do. Thanks so much. And that concludes another episode of The Seventh Matrix Eye on Sci-Fi podcast. Thanks again for listening, and remember to subscribe to us via our RSS feed, on iTunes, or wherever you found us. And please leave us a review on iTunes as well. That really helps others find us, and I really appreciate it. Make sure to head over to the7thmatrix.com to discover a wealth of independent science fiction and fantasy content that we have collected there. Sign up for our newsletter so that you will receive our latest discoveries directly into your inbox. So until next episode, everyone, remember to take a break, escape the mundane, and enter the fantastic. Take care.